I'm very pleased to have in the studio Brian Ashby and Courtney Prokopos.
You got it.
Hey, how about that? I'm not so bad at that. By the way, I have to tell you, I just got a tweet from Scott Jamieson, and maybe it's because I mentioned his name on the air, so he's being nice to me. He said, check out Mike Now Facebook page. It's actually The Mike Novak Show. If you're into gardening and all things green, and he writes, read him, listen to him, like him. It just seems sad and pathetic, doesn't it, really? It's like, please like Mike. I remember when I was in grade school, I was running for class president. This is in grade school. And I was running for the president, and at the time, I mean, this is just so long ago, it's scary. Mattel had this little kit where you could make plastic badges. You poured in a little mold, and you could make little plastic badges. Mm-hmm. And I took my slogan from the Eisenhower campaign, which was "I like Ike," which is one of the great slogans of all time. And, of course, mine was, I like Mike.
So you're pre-Jordan?
Pre-Jordan.
Pre-Michael Jordan, I like Mike.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm totally pre-Michael Jordan. Oh, yeah, he followed my footsteps, okay? And so I had these badges that said, I like Mike, and a friend of mine was wearing one. And he came up to me and he said, I like Mike, but I'm voting for Bob. So... that really worked well, didn't it? Pull those microphones just a little closer, guys. As I said, Brian Ashby and Courtney Prokopos are in the studio. They are filmmakers. University of Chicago, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Because I know a friend of yours, John Kurinsky.
Do you? Not a friend of mine.
Oh. Oh, not anymore anyway, right?
Maybe a future friend of mine.
It could be. He knew you because he's a UFC guy, and I work with him occasionally. And he said, oh, yeah, I know those guys. It must be you're famous. You're the famous ones, all right? Well, you know, you are famous in a sense because I'm sure you're tired of this already when people go to the Roger Ebert review.
Oh, we're not tired in the
Oh, list. You're not? Oh, okay.
We love it.
Oh, you love that stuff. 3.5 stars. I mean, wow. You guys must have, and I see Leah's got on the screen the scrapper she was showing, she went to the website.
Yeah, I'm going
to
post this on Twitter here.
It's just astounding, some of the footage you have from your movie Scrappers. So you must have fallen on the floor when you saw that. The Ebert thing.
A little bit. It was quite a surprise.
Now, did you know he was going to review it?
Yeah, I sent it to him. I think in this sort of phase in his life and critical career, he's got a lot of freedom to review films he likes. And he really cares about Chicago film, too.
Yeah, that's true. That's got to be a really good point for documentary filmmakers, because here's a guy... he's been doing this for a long time, and as you said, he's not doing TV anymore, and he has... Can you imagine being Roger Ebert and just watching film after film? I think I'd lose my mind. but that's what he does. And he blogs, and he's got a wonderful blog. I mean, if you've never been to Ebert's blog, it's... I see things... I usually see it on Twitter. Somebody will say, oh, Ebert just posted this great blog. And I'll go to it, and it's usually fantastic. Now, you have a third filmmaker, Ben Kolak, who's not here because?
Because he came down with a summer flu and lost his voice.
Oh, dear. That's not good. That's not fun. You know, it's no fun getting sick in the summer. It's no fun getting sick anytime, but you think, wait a second, this is the summer! I'm supposed to be having a good time! How long have the two of you been studying film, Courtney?
I graduated from the University of Chicago in 2006, and I was in the visual arts department. So I was working in film and video there,
mm-hmm.
and sort of been dappling with it since. But we met up after we graduated, though we graduated at the same time,
mm-hmm.
And started working on the project, the three of us. So we started in 2006 and are continuing with it now.
You know, when I think of, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, yeah, the only one of the three of us who studied film academically is Ben. My training's all on the job.
Oh, really? The Earn As You Learn program. But, you know, it's the school of hard knocks, whatever, you know. What did you study?
Political science.
Well, that plays into this, though.
Yeah, totally drew me to the scrappers. I was really, really curious about how that whole system worked.
Well, what was the germination of the idea? Whose idea was it to do this?
It was actually Ben's idea. He made a short film while he was at the UFC, profiling just one scrap recycling center and some of the people who went there. And met up with the two of us various spots, and we thought it would be worthy of a feature film. Actually, it was really nice as just underemployed college graduates. We didn't have a lot else to do at that period in 2006. We started hanging out at scrap yards many hours a week, probably talked to hundreds of scrappers. And putting that effort into the kind of pre-production, the film really paid off to find the two families that you do see in the film.
Well, that's where I have to go eventually, man. I've got a lot of questions about the film, so but I do want to explain again for those who weren't here for the first hour. Scrappers is a film about two guys who drive those trucks you see in the city of Chicago, and I would imagine some suburbs too.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And they pick up metal scraps. And anybody knows, in the city of Chicago especially, but elsewhere, if you need to get rid of metal, that's the easy stuff. That's always the easiest thing you can do. You put it out with your garbage, put it on top, make sure it's highly visible, and it's usually gone in a half an hour. Because there's so many. Do you have any idea how many trucks are driving around like that?
You know, I looked for a long time to see if there would be statistics on the subject, but to my knowledge, nobody's collected them. Nobody's counted. People kind of turn to this work when, you know, they have some time in their life, and then they go away from it, and then there's some people who just work around the clock.
But it's kind of an underground economy.
It's absolutely.
Completely informal. Yeah, it's off the books.
Do they all get cash?
Yep, totally cash. I would think the large scrap yards each would serve several hundred customers a day, and there's more than 100 scrap yards in Chicago.
So how do these guys driving these trucks, taking the scrap yards, getting paid in cash, how is it they don't get screwed by the people who are paying them? And you know, because, who knows, probably a number of them are illegals. A lot of them, they might be going on to, they might be trespassing to get stuff. I mean, there's all kinds of shady things going on. And I imagine one of the shady things is that the people who are paying them might not give them their full due.
That's a reasonable concern, but it's sort of like how when you go to a new mechanic, you're not quite sure if they're going to charge you the right amount or not. It's a trust issue.
Oh, wait a second. Except for my mechanic.
Yeah.
Pete.
I need his name.
Pete. Okay, I will give you his name. I love Pete, if you're listening, I love you, baby. All right? You are my mechanic. I'm not even going to. Well, he's on Wilson and Pulaski.
Good.
I love Pete, and I know I'm always getting a fair deal from him. But you're right; it's like a doctor, mm-hmm. or a mechanic. We're always looking for somebody we can trust. So I guess they go to the people they can trust.
Yeah, so just a whole informal market based on everyday interactions where people give each other information and tips and what have you. And the scrapyards that are thought to be cooking the books or having inaccurate scales or something go out of business. And it works two ways, too. Mm-hmm. A lot of guys come in and try to cheat them, where they drive their truck in full of tanks of water, or they'll fill up their aluminum cans full of pebbles, stuff like that. So there's a lot of strong trust between people, and then a lot of distrust, and it's a anxiety-filled scene at the scrapyard.
But you know what? And that's another thing you bring up in the film. The whole thing is anxiety-ridden because of the fluctuations in the economy. As you start out in 2007, mm-hmm. basically, and you show what happens to the market in the course of a couple of years. Now, obviously, you had to stop shooting at some point. Otherwise, you could have followed it to where we are now, and maybe there's a slight rebound, maybe there's not. I mean, have you kept up with these people since you finished the film?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And just to talk about the fluctuations in the market, we got supremely lucky as documentary filmmakers. You know, what drew us to Scrapping was it was clear to us that the prices were high and lots of people were doing this. We wanted to know why. But we filmed with these two families for about a year and a half, and then this completely unprecedented crash of the market happened. No one had ever seen anything like it before. None of the scrappers, none of the scrap dealers. And, you know, it was a fallout in the commodities market of what happened to the stock market.
Mm-hmm.
And it happened literally overnight, the way it's portrayed in our film. The prices went down to, you know, 75% to 90%. And in other recycled goods, like paper and stuff like that, prices went into a negative.
Yeah. And I'm glad you brought that up. And again, by the way, we're talking to Brian Ashby, Courtney Prokopis, who are filmmakers who made the documentary Scrappers, which is going to be shown this Thursday at the Logan Square Kitchen as part of a fundraiser for the Chicago Recycling Coalition. You point out that at one point in the film, a ton was getting $300 and then suddenly it was $60. And
right.
These are people who are living, are scrambling as it is, mm-hmm. living day to day on these paychecks. And suddenly it was costing them more to drive the trucks around than the money they could get for the scrap. And yet they go on that because I assume it's because it's the only thing they know how to do.
Mm-hmm.
And the most amazing thing is that you got to know them as people, and that's what you find out in the film. It's not just about the commodities and how do you get this metal and what can you do with this. You suddenly were in their homes, in their kitchens. One guy has to go to the hospital. One guy, and the same guy, he moves three times or twice, you know, in the course of the film, and you're following him. How did you get that access? How did they trust you with that?
It was very quick with Oscar. The first day we met him, he said...
And the two names are Oscar and...
Oh, Oscar and Otis.
Otis.
The first day that we met Oscar, he said, come on back, my wife's making soup. So once we met him, we knew this is our guy.
Uh-huh.
We spent the afternoon with his family, hanging out, talking about more than just scrap.
And how old is Oscar?
Oscar is...
He's pushing 40.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, Otis is in his 70s.
Yes.
And he's been doing
this... He's pushing 80.
Pushing 80, really?
Yeah.
Wow. And you see him out there lifting this stuff and dragging this stuff and throwing it in the truck. But again, it's... You know, I got an aunt who's in her mid-90s mm-hmm. and works, as far as I know, still 4 days a week at a gas station in Detroit. And she says it keeps her alive. You know, this is what she looks forward to. She's not sitting home watching TV, thank God. And same thing with Otis. I'm sure that that's what's keeping him going.
Yes.
Yeah, and I can give people who might be considering coming on Thursday an idea of who the characters they're going to see in the film are. Otis is this older African-American guy from the South Side. His background was kind of as a neighborhood junk man figure, so he's been involved in scrapping for 40 or 50 years. He learned it from Polish immigrants, and he raised 12 kids.
Those are my people, you
yeah.
know. Okay.
Mine,
and Leah's, of course.
But he raised 12 kids successfully just by being a scrapper. He used to have a building where he ran a flea market where he would fix up all of these materials, home appliances and stuff like that, and basically ran a one-man shop where he would collect, repair, and sell all these goods. And then we met him shortly after that when his wife had passed away and he moved into a senior CHA housing project. Then things get very interesting in his life in the film in some ways you just described. And the other character is
yeah,
Oscar.
We don't want to give that away because it actually is intriguing to see what's happening to him in ways that are tangentially related to what he does, the scrapping thing.
The other character is Oscar, who is an undocumented immigrant from Honduras. Came to the country probably around 10 years ago at this point and got into scrapping because... it was so much better than the other opportunities that were available to him. Didn't have anyone looking over his back. He didn't have to work in the kind of menial, insulting conditions a lot of people like him do. And he found that if he worked harder, he'd make more money, which wasn't true in a lot of other aspects of his life. And he really liked being out in his community, basically 100% Hispanic community on the Northwest side, where he would meet people and make social connections to get metal and just kind of enjoy himself out on the scene collecting scrap.
Leo, pull the mic over if you want it. Yeah. Okay.
I just want to say my grandpa was a big can collector, and he used to tell stories about, you talk about how it's it's almost probably like the trading floor, like with stocks, where everybody's kind of, no, I'll give this. No, da-da-da. Is it kind of like that? I think I kind of envision it.
Yeah, well, the prices of metal are determined on a commodities exchange, which is exactly like the trading floor. There's two of them. There's one in London and one in Mexico City.
Oh.
And then these scrap dealers at their local yards monitor those prices online, and they fluctuate, you know, every 5 seconds.
Uh-huh.
And then they change their prices, and the scrappers are calling them all around the city to find out who's paying what. And this it's a process that goes on 24 hours.
And I also want to say that we gave my grandpa 10 huge bags filled with cans one day for Father's Day, and he almost, like, dropped dead. He was like, oh, my God, this is the best thing ever. But then we got him a can crusher one year. My family did. But that wasn't good because the recycling guys don't like to crush cans because you can, like, pack sand and stuff into it right to weigh it down. And I didn't realize that there are all these, like, industry tricks to make your load a little heavier when they weigh it.
Did you run into those gaming techniques?
Certainly ran into a lot of people who knew about them and were trying to
not say that they
circumvent
them.
Yeah.
Or circumvent them.
Wow. Some of the most dramatic footage you have in there is in the yards themselves. Is that a little scary to be in there? I mean, I'm sure you were safe, but those cranes and those claws and the things that crush metal, it's awe-inspiring in a way and terrifying at the same time.
We were very close to those piles.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Any stories to tell?
No. And one thing that the scrapyards pride themselves on is safety and that their employees follow guidelines and everyone wears a hard hat. So they were that was the one consideration that they had for us, that you need to have a hard hat. You need to be very careful. Like, if we say move, you need to move.
Mm-hmm. Now.
Yeah, go
yeah.
now.
Yeah.
And it's for your own good.
It was harder to get that trust with those facilities than even with our characters. It took a long time.
Were they suspicious of you in any way?
Yes. Like I mentioned before about that anxiety-ridden scene, the scrapyards that are doing good business are extremely safe and take their regulations really seriously, but they're under constant monitoring by the EPA, by OSHA, by the police for any number of things. So people thought... I don't know what they thought, but they thought we had a lot of interesting different motivations than what we might have had. But we eventually convinced some people we were legit. But at the same time, as hard as they work on safety, sometimes things happen. Like, they work really, really hard to make sure propane tanks don't end up in the waste stream there. But sometimes they do, and then they blow up.
Oh, my goodness.
In terms of stories, once Oscar threw part of my tripod into the scrap heap, and it was too late to get it out.
Did he just get carried away? Oh, look, metal. Yeah.
It was on the floor of his truck. We hadn't realized we dropped it there, and it was mixed in with some other stuff.
Oh, my. Yeah, and they don't care, because even if stuff works, if it still works, it's going to go to scrap.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because they're not interested in whether it's intact. They're interested in its metal value. And as a matter of fact, I noticed that when I was watching in the film, them unloading some of the stuff, and I'm looking at it and goes, hey, that's a perfectly good whatever, widget.
Ladders. Ladders are big. Aluminum ladders.
That was it. Yeah, it was a ladder. I was looking at that and saying, they're throwing away a perfectly good aluminum ladder. What the heck? And couldn't they get more money reselling the ladder?
Probably. And I imagine, Mike, you want to talk about this film vis-a-vis recycling, because we'll be screening this film at a benefit for the Chicago Recycling Coalition. And what makes it work, why it's kind of the oldest form of recycling, is, you know, economies of scale. So what I learned is that in production of new steel, 80% of the iron comes from recycled steel. And that's the way it's been for quite some time. But at the same time, that massive economy of scale makes it such that if they see some item that could be reused in its current form, it's not worth their time to pull it out. So all the time we spend in scrapyards, we'd pull out all these great, amazing antique items and take them home and stuff. But it doesn't make sense for them to do that. All they care about is chemical elements and weights.
Amazing. All right. That's Brian Ashby. Courtney Prokopis is here as well. Ben Kolak is the third of the triumvirate that made the film Scrappers. I'm glad you brought it up, because we have to talk about recycling in Chicago. And by the way, if anybody's got a question, 773-838-9278 about the film, about recycling. We are having a fundraiser. And when I say we... I say this all the time when I talk about this. I'm president of the Chicago Recycling Coalition. What does that mean? It means I spent a lot of time trying to raise money and try to get the word out about recycling in Chicago. As you know, we've had a terrible terrible, terrible, terrible recycling system, practically non-existent for a long, long time. We've got blue carts. It's so hard to explain about recycling in Chicago, especially to people who move here from other cities, who blink and scratch their heads and say, what? You know, I just came from Portland. I just came from New York. I just came from Atlanta. I came from wherever. And they all have recycling programs that work. Here, right now, the best you can say about recycling in Chicago is that some people have it. That's the best you can say.
And some people do it because it takes
And some
time
people
and
do, it.
To do it.
When I recycle, and I recycle a lot from my home, it piles up for a while because I have to take it to a drop-off center and put it into the big blue dumpster. So I don't do it every day. There's a recycling day, once a month or something like that. I take it over there, and this is because the households in Chicago, which are four units, they divide it up in the city of Chicago, in case you're not familiar with it. If you have four units or fewer in a building, that's considered basically a single-family residence, even though there might be four. And those buildings are supposed to get blue carts, which started under Daley administration in 2008 after the horrible, horrible blue bag program failed so miserably for 15 years. So they went to blue cart, and they said by the end of 2011, we will roll out all 600,000 blue carts. Well, then the economy tanked, as you guys just talked about in the film. You saw it happen with the scrappers. It happened with the city of Chicago. We have a $700 million deficit here, or something. Who knows exactly what it is. And so a third, about 40% of the households ended up with blue cart before they ran out of money. So right now, about, 240,000 residences have blue carts, which means that parts of wards, we've talked about this, I've had aldermen on the show to talk about this. It's weird because it's not as if it was ward to ward. It's just they do it on a grid. So parts of wards will have blue cart, and aldermen are faced with phone calls from people who say, well, my neighbor has it across the alley, but I don't have it. How come? And the alderman has to say, I don't know, because there's no money. Well, when are we going to get it? I don't know. There's no money. And then the Daley administration decided it was going to, well, it started, it sent out the floater here, the, what do you call it, the, whatever. They made noises about privatizing at the end of the administration, and it never happened. The idea was that the city was going to be divided into six areas, and private companies were going to pick up the recycling, and it was going to be taken away from the Department of Streets and Sanitation, which does it right now. Well, Daley left office. That didn't happen. So Rahm Emanuel comes in, and Rahm recently, just last month, said, okay, we're going to follow through on this in a way. We're going to give four of those areas to private companies in what he's calling managed competition. And managed competition is basically going to pit the private companies in four areas versus city workers in two areas. And Mayor Emanuel says, we're going to give them 6 months, and then we're going to see who's most cost effective. Here's a problem with that. First of all, waste management has three of those areas, and waste management has a very, let me just say, checkered history, to be really kind to the company. There are a number of other questions. Now, if I don't have time to go into all of them right now, but I will go into some of them, and you can find out more by going to my website, mikenovak.net. Go to this week's show, because I put a link to an article that we've put together in the Chicago Recycling Coalition, and I almost forgot my full disclosure. I don't make any money doing that. Let me just tell you, as president, We wrote an article called "Is Mayor Emanuel's Managed Competition Really Just Stealth Privatization?" And in a sense, I think it might be, because he's going to do this managed competition for 6 months, and then who's deciding, and how is it being decided that one company or another, or the city workers, have been more effective? You know, what other criteria will be measured by number of households placing the appropriate recycles in the appropriate containers, by a reduction in the amount of waste hauled away? What will be the criteria of the private workers compared to the city union workforce? Will private companies be required to provide a detailed financial breakdown of their operations? Where will the numbers be posted? I mean, we have question upon question upon question upon question. Now, I will say the Emanuel administration has done a pretty good job of pretending Chicago Recycling Coalition does not exist. So, you know, we put it up there, and I talk about it on my radio show, and I say, okay, we would like to know how the transparency in this will work. How transparent will it be? Where can we get the numbers? And how can we be sure that this isn't just a scam? You know, that at the end of 6 months, that the decision's already been made, that it's going to be privatized. But you know what? We'll give it 6 months and we'll pretend that we're doing a real competition. So this is another reason we're having this benefit. This coming Thursday, doors open at 6 p.m. at the Logan Square Kitchen, which is a gold LEED certified building. And Zena Murray from, oh, you know what?
What's the address?
We need to get her on the phone. I forgot. I didn't put her name down because she first told me she wasn't going to be able to make it, and I think she can. And let me just send this to you, Heather.
Leah,
you're not Heather. Okay, here, give Zena a call. Let's see if she's available. I'm not sure she is at the moment, but she runs the Logan Square Kitchen. And in addition to showing the movie Scrappers, like I said, we're going to have beer and wine. We're going to have craft beer, craft soda, as a matter of fact, which is kind of cool, gourmet popcorn. We're going to have PC rebuilders and recyclers going to be on hand to pick up electronic waste, which I think is wonderful. There's going to be tours of the Logan Square Kitchen. And you can ask questions about this whole deal that I've been talking about and waxing poetic on for a couple of minutes here. I think a lot of people in the city of Chicago want to know really what's going on. Well, we don't know. And you know, and Blue Card is just the tip of the iceberg. We have this whole group. There's another link that I've put on my website, which is an article that just ran in the Chicago Reader. Mick Dumke, who's been on the show a number of times, has an excellent piece called "Why You Should Care About the Way Garbage is Picked Up," because now Mayor Emanuel wants to, he's talking about putting a grid system in for garbage pickup. Now, there are good things about that. I just want to make sure that this is being done right, that this is just not a closet way to bust the unions, because this might be what his intention is all along. Don't know. I know what he says he's going to do, but his relationship with the unions is not particularly wonderful at the moment. So we are looking for good people to come to the event, talk to us, mobilize, get some things taken care of. And that's why I'm so happy to have you, Brian, and Courtney. You guys are going to be there and answer questions about the movie as well. And as a matter of fact, we have a person on the line right now who's got a question about Scrappers. So
all right,
let's go to line one. You guys have your headsets on. Santo, one of my favorite listeners, how you doing?
I'm okay. I just got at the beginning of this crash of this economy, I was a union bricklayer. Out of work for about, until I retired, I was probably out of work for almost a year and a half, 2 years. So I started getting into scrapping, and I spent a lot of time in the scrap yards. And I watched a lot of businesses that went under, scrap out a lot of their equipment, their scaffolding, their shelving, their machinery. And then you sit around and you hear the politicians talking a lot of baloney over here, and I think it's all baloney in my opinion, about we need to create jobs. Well, we've taken a lot of our industry and we've sent it to the scrapyard. How does somebody think that they're going to start a new business when somebody's had a business for 50, 60, 80 years. The economy crashes, taxes go up, EPA, OSHA's involved more and more, more regulations on top of businesses. How do they think that this country is ever going to get back to manufacturing or warehousing or anything? Everything's being outsourced all over the world. I see that it's. I look at the big picture, this big economy, and I just based upon how I look into the scrapyard and see how everything's being pushed into the dump, because now scrap is $290 a ton, and people need money. So I don't see how this country is going to retool itself because of the price of steel being double the price of regulations. Every time you turn around, there's a new regulation, a new certification. You know, I don't know. Did you guys, your guests over there, was this one of the issues of this movie, or what's their view on it?
Santa, what I would say, first of all, it sounds like a question for Tom Hartman, who probably has an opinion. But, yeah, Brian and Courtney, did you deal with this at all?
Yeah, well, that's...
I'm going to hang up.
Oh, okay. Thanks for calling, Santa. Always a pleasure hearing from you.
Cool. Well, yeah, Santa, that's obviously rather a tough question, but it is exactly the kind of themes we wanted to address in this movie by looking into that entire scene. Some people, when they see these scrappers, might follow the line I alluded to before that, you know, this is really an innovative form of recycling. There's people on the bottom of the economy. They're able to get some money to survive. The taxpayer doesn't have to pay for this. You know, why isn't it good? And then other people might look at it and say, this is indicative of the sort of new economy, the one you just described, where the only thing that's happening industrially is people taking apart, you know, dismantling and shipping away our old industry. And it's not like we have an answer to that question, but we're showing off certainly how real it is.
Well, and how it affects the common person. You know, that's it. And I think what Ebert saw in your film was the humanity you bring to this.
Yeah, and it's exactly the point Santo just made, that people make decisions based simply on economic incentives. So more people are going to do this work if the price of metal is higher, and he was just comparing it on the phone now to the price of regulation of running certain kinds of businesses, and I'd say that's certainly true. And all of the scrap, a vast majority of it, also gets exported to be taken apart in other countries that have lower, you know, human services and environmental regulations.
I just got a Twitter post, a tweet asking, you know, when and where is it being shown. The link is on MikeNovak.net, and the easiest way, just go to my homepage, and you're going to see a popcorn box with the Chicago Recycling Coalition logo on it. Just click on there. All the information is there. You can get your tickets at Brown Paper Tickets. And let me make a point, folks. It's $20. It's only $20. Now, you're going to spend $20 on nothing, believe me, in the next week. We could really use your help. We're, you know, I don't make many pitches on this show to raise money ever for anything. This is something I believe in because there's nobody else in the city of Chicago working on the recycling problem the way we are. And we're not for profit. Nobody gets paid. We've been doing this for 25 years. We are part of the reason the blue bag got brought down. And we continue to fight for real recycling in Chicago. Once we get past the blue card, see, my whole problem with the Emanuel administration right now is I'm not seeing a comprehensive plan. What they're doing, you know, trying to expand blue card, that's not comprehensive recycling. Comprehensive recycling is going to involve all the high rises, which are not covered by the blue card, hundreds of thousands of people. We haven't addressed composting, which is a huge issue. It doesn't really address garbage pickup, which is part of that deal. Yes, you know, we're making noises about going to a grid system, which makes a lot of aldermen angry because it's picked up by a ward system, which is inefficient. The problem with that, as Mick Dumke points out in his article, and as I've said all along, is if you take away the power of the aldermen to control your garbage pickup and to some extent your recycling, but right now garbage pickup, they lose power. Well, this is a city where all the power is concentrated in City Hall as it is. Is that what you want? You know, why don't we just crown an emperor? We could do that too. His other good point is that maybe aldermen need to stand up and actually do what they're paid to do, which is to make laws and make good laws and not be a rubber stamp for City Hall. That'd be a nice thing too. I don't expect it in the city of Chicago, but you never know what can happen when people fight for what they believe in. So this is why I'm saying, please, if you can, come to Logan Square Kitchen Thursday, 6 p.m. The doors open. The movie starts at 7:30. Bring your electronic recycling. Put it out there. Come and talk to us. If you can't make it, make a donation online. We've got the link. Like I said, click on the popcorn box at mikenowak.net, MikeNowak.net. You'll find out where to you'll see all the information at the bottom. You can click on and make a donation. We'd rather have you come to the event so you can meet the filmmakers and see Scrappers and talk about that as well, because it's all mixed in. It's, you know, it's people's lives. It's about the way we live and live in an environmentally sound way. And we need to get this done. It's just crazy. This is the 21st century. Heck, we're in the second decade of the 21st century, and we don't recycle in Chicago. Looks like Zena's not available. That's okay. She's going to be there. She's going to give tours of the kitchen. You'll meet her. She's wonderful. And again, the kitchen is it's a shared use kitchen, and they use it for events and other things. And it's just fabulous. I've rambled on enough. Before I let you go, I just real quick question, Brian and Courtney, what was the separation of duties in terms of who did the shooting, who did the editing, or was it everybody did everything?
There was a little bit of everybody doing everything. Mm-hmm. I was behind the camera most of the time, so I did most of the shooting. Brian and Ben did their fair part as well. We had two cameras on a lot of times, so there had to be two of us behind those cameras. Brian,
where did you get your equipment? Is it yours, or,
yes,
or did you rent?
No, started out with Ben Kolak's freelance video business and sort of acquired more from there, but... Mm-hmm. Yeah, all three of us shot the film. All three of us did the sound on the film. We together did a lot of editing, and then we worked with a really talented editor named Aaron Wickenden, who works at Kartemquin Films, which is a really strong documentary collective in Chicago. Another film that he just edited called The Interrupters, which is about the ceasefire program, is premiering this weekend.
Oh, I'd like to see that, because ceasefire has been active in my neighborhood, and they're controversial. You know,
yeah,
it's a very interesting group, controversial group. I don't know if you've heard of ceasefire, but... for those folks listening.
Well, that's sort of another film involving similar people from our group. And then the composer is a Chicago jazz drummer called Frank Rosalie.
Mm-hmm. Great. Oh. Well, and you had your own music.
Yeah, it's all original.
Yeah.
And, we'll really look forward to discussing these issues in a little more depth after the screening. I'm really interested in what people from recycling sort of activism have to say about this movie. Because, like you said, all these issues are interconnected. But I'm really wondering where you see the solution fitting in, too. I really appreciate it when you said your view of the film made you think of the humanity and dignity of these characters, which is what we set out to do. But mm-hmm. I'm wondering, too, because Scrappers in some ways disinhibit a city recycling program because they take the most valuable recyclables, right?
Uh-huh. Well,
we have a call. Where can you see the film?
All right. Let's take a real quick call. Marcy, you're on the Mike Novak Show.
Hi. I love your show. Unfortunately, I won't be able to come to the fundraiser, so where can I see this movie after that?
That's a really good question, isn't it?
Hey, it's screened theatrically in Chicago quite a bit, but you can purchase a DVD from us at scrappersmovie.com, and we're working to make the film available digitally on Netflix or similar services, but it's not quite there yet.
You can also find us on Facebook, Scrappers, and we post whenever we have a screening there.
Excellent.
Throughout the country. So,
thank you very much.
Marcy, if you can't make it, I would consider giving a contribution to the Chicago Recycling Coalition.
I absolutely will. That was my other question, but you'd already answered it.
No.
So thank
okay,
you.
Great. Do you live in Chicago?
I live in Northwest Indiana, and we have a very good recycling program.
Ah, boy. Everybody does except us. Okay.
All right. Have a great day.
You too, Marcy. Bye-bye. All right, folks, thank you so much. Brian Ashby, Courtney Prokopis, you'll see them Thursday at our benefit for the Chicago Recycling Coalition. It was so great having you on the program, and I will – we have a sound check on Wednesday, Brian.
Tuesday.
Oh, thank you for telling me. Oh, my goodness. I'm glad. I've got it marked in the calendar. I'll probably get it wrong, but you're right. It is Tuesday morning, and I'll see you. And thank you both for coming down.
Thank you for having us.
My pleasure.